Welcome to the IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast for couples who struggle with infertility and want to fulfill their dreams of becoming parents. In this podcast, you'll learn actionable strategies to deal with infertility from Dr. Michael Chapman, or Prof as he's affectionately known. Prof is the co-founder of IVF Australia and is a leading Australian infertility specialist who has helped over 3,000 couples realise their dreams of becoming parents. To access previous episodes packed with ideas, solutions and tips that actually work, head over to Dr. Chapman's IVF podcast on iTunes. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him, michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.
That first cry of a baby born after the long journey of IVF remains one of the most beautiful experiences in the world. As an obstetrician and an IVF specialist, I've had the privilege of experiencing this over many thousands of times in my long career, but I still remain moved by each baby's first cry. It signifies the end of a long journey and the beginning of a new life. This is Professor Michael Chapman, co-founder of IVF Australia and host of the IVF Journey podcast. Thanks for tuning in. To access all the previous episodes, head over to my website, www.theivfjourney.com, and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu. You'll also be able to find the various services that we provide at IVF Australia. Today we're going to talk about many of the things that are floating around when couples trying to conceive listen to their friends, look on the internet, or read books, allegedly informative books, about how to conceive. There are many myths that are out there, and I'll try and run through some of them and hopefully dispel them in your own mind. I suppose the first myth is that it's getting pregnant's easy. We all know that our sister or our best friend got married and was pregnant in the first month, and therefore everybody should get pregnant very easily. But it's not true. The natural rate of conception is 1 in 6. In other words, 15% per cycle. So each month it's like rolling the dice. You've got 6 sides to a dice, you roll the dice. If you get a 6 first time, you're pregnant. But we've all played Monopoly. We've rolled the dice multiple times and never got the 6. So getting pregnant isn't necessarily that easy. However, what we do is decide now is the time to get pregnant, and therefore we expect it to happen immediately and get very frustrated after 1, 2, 3, 4 months of trying. But even by 4 months of trying, the odds of being pregnant, the odds of throwing that 6, are still less than 50-50. In fact, you're unusual if you fall pregnant within 4 months. That said, people then start looking for ways of enhancing their chances of conceiving. So myth number 2, getting the timing right. This is not such a myth because you ovulate around about 14 days before the next period, make an egg at that time, release an egg at that time, and therefore having intercourse around that time is essential. An egg lives for about 4 to 5 hours of actual fertilizability, where it will be able to be inseminated by a sperm to swim up to it, attach itself to the eggshell, work its way through the eggshell, take its genetic material into the egg and produce a pregnancy. So it's a fairly small window in a once a month event. Sperm, however, hang around for up to 72 hours and maybe even longer. But certainly 72 hours seems, if you've got a normal sperm count, normal parameters, are swimming well, are normally shaped, they hang around for around 3 days. So provided there is sperm around at the time the egg comes down the fallopian tube, where is the rendezvous point to produce fertilization, then pregnancy can occur. So the timing is important, but the timing is not always easy to work out. Most women, probably 80%, have a cycle that's 28 or 29 days. And that's relatively easy to work out when ovulation occurs. 14 days before day 28 is going to be day 14 from the beginning of the cycle. So beginning of the cycle is the first day of bleeding. A number of patients come to me saying, well, I had intercourse on day 14 after my period. What they're saying is that their period lasts 4 days, and then they've added 14 to that. And I'm sorry, they've missed the boat. So it's from the first day of bleeding that you count those 14 days in the 28-day cycle. A small percentage of women have a regular 30 or 32-day cycle. Their ovulation isn't halfway through the cycle. It isn't, again, 14 days before the expected period. So that's going to be around day 16 to 18 of the cycle. So if you have intercourse on day 12 or 13, thinking you're covering day 14, you're wrong. So timing is important. That's not a myth. But some of the things working out the timing, as I pointed out, are untrue. I've heard or read in certain uninformed magazines, hoping to help people get pregnant, that an orgasm is essential for producing a pregnancy. Obviously, an orgasm for a male is, because that's how he produces the sperm. But for the female, there's absolutely no evidence that orgasm enhances or has any impact on the chances of conceiving. So you don't need to keep trying and worrying if you're not having an orgasm and that's why you're not getting pregnant. Equally untrue is the concept that having intercourse in the missionary position improves your chances of getting pregnant. There is no evidence for that, that any position can produce a pregnancy, provided the sperm, when the man ejaculates, is ejaculated into the upper vagina. So get on with it. Go wild. It's not going to change the chances of getting pregnant, either in a positive way or a negative way. You don't have to be just the boring old missionary position. Following on from that is the other misconception, and I have a fantastic image on a movie, I've forgotten the name. Anyway, fantastic, where the guy screams home on his motorbike, jumps out of the car because her pregnancy timer has said that she's going to ovulate, jumps into bed, they go for it, and then she lies on her back with her legs sticking up in the air for the next 20 minutes. Supposedly, someone's read in a book that this would improve the situation because the sperm won't fall out. Absolute garbage. The sperm that's deposited in the upper vagina stays in the upper vagina. Now, many of you will say, but it runs out. And I've certainly had patients saying that. Is there something wrong? If that's the situation, it's because there is sperm in the lower vagina, or he has had an ejaculate of 4 or 5 mils rather than 2 to 3 mils, which is the commonest one amount. So, yeah, don't worry about sperm falling out as long as it's at the top of the vagina. And certainly lying on your back with your legs in the air to hold it in is going to make no difference to your pregnancy rate. The question of how often you should have intercourse. Again, you might have heard that having intercourse too frequently can diminish the supply or diminish the quality and therefore impair the chances of success. Again, there's little evidence to support that view. So you can have intercourse really as frequently as you like. It really is going to make no difference. The only group it may make some difference to is if the male has a low sperm count to start with, and then perhaps storing it up for 2 or 3 attempts at the right time may be better. That timing and that frequency of intercourse can reduce the degree of spontaneity. And I'm afraid as you focus more and more on the fact that you're not getting pregnant, the more and more sex becomes an ordeal rather than an enjoyment. I wish I had a cure for that, because I think it does impact on your chances of conceiving. There's a multitude of suggested treatments in addition to the standard medical treatments that are supposed to improve the chances of success. Complementary medicines. The evidence of all of this hype about vitamins, about Chinese herbs, about interventions like hypnotherapy or acupuncture, there is no no scientific evidence in randomized controlled trials that they make any difference. Personally, I believe people are making millions or billions of dollars preying on the desire of every couple to maximize their chances of being able to conceive. But there is no evidence that any of them work. Interventions like acupuncture have been investigated with some degree of science, and the studies really split 50-50. There may be something in it. Personally, I believe that's more about the relaxation that acupuncture does rather than any definitive production of hormones or modification of the nervous system that acupuncture is claimed to do. There's no question that lifestyle, some aspects of lifestyle, do impinge on the potential for pregnancy. And certainly overeating and overweight definitely reduces the chances of success. In relation to alcohol, there is no evidence that alcohol makes a particular difference to the chances of conception. Obviously, excessive alcohol is not going to help a male potentially have an erection at the right time if he's so drunk that he can't do it. But moderation in alcohol, I personally don't believe, makes no difference to your chances of success. Perhaps a couple of glasses of alcohol may improve the enjoyment of trying to have a baby or trying to conceive. The same holds for caffeine. I know I get patients who come in and say, oh, well, I've given up caffeine because my mother said I drink too much coffee. The evidence is that if you only drink 2 or 3 cups of coffee a day, it's absolutely fine. And the same once you do get pregnant. The evidence is pretty marginal that it does any harm whatsoever. Another myth is that couples who try and try and try and don't get pregnant and therefore go for adoption will suddenly conceive. We've all heard stories like this, but when people have done the analysis, the chances of conceiving, that background rate that I've talked about, is always there. And people who've adopted are no different to the general population. And that relates back again to the claims made with the adjuvant therapies, those vitamins and concoctions that are being sold on the market to help people conceive. The problem is that background pregnancy rate is always there. So if you've been trying to get pregnant for 3 months, and as I said earlier, that's probably less than a 30% chance of being pregnant spontaneously, but knowing that in the next 6 to 9 months it will rise to 90%, if you start taking medication at that 3 month point because somebody else recommended it or you read it in a magazine or in the internet, if you take medication and you get pregnant, who gets the credit? The obvious thing, it's the medication you've taken, but it's not true. Randomized placebo-controlled trials show this makes no impact whatsoever. So there are lots of myths associated with fertility. I hope I've dispelled some of them. And my advice for those couples setting out on a journey that hopefully will end up with a baby is to be as natural as possible, relaxed as possible. Do not, if possible, focus on the issue, because nature is actually a wonderful thing. It cures most infertility. Time and patience is the best approach to getting pregnant. And don't forget that you can access all the previous episodes by going to our website, www.theivfjourney.com, and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu.
Thank you for listening to The IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast which helps couples negotiate their way through the IVF journey, all the way to parenthood. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.